We're going to go third time lucky with Tony Gosling. So, Tony, if you unmute and take it away.
Can you hear me okay this time, Patrick?
So far, so good.
Okay. Well, let's not tempt fate. But anyway, look, there's another aspect to Bilderberg, and I think we really must look at the evil involved here. Look at what's happening in Ukraine right now. The lies that are coming out about how Ukraine has got to win is just simply destroying the nation. It's destroying a whole generation, maybe two generations of the population, particularly the men who are being, many of them anyway, press ganged into fighting. So, you've got an unwinnable war. And yet they're being told, go, go, go. It's rather like the sort of World War One scenario, isn't it? That, people are being just sent to their deaths, effectively. And so we must take, I think, a step back and look at the, this is a kind of good and evil thing. The reason I got interested in it, Pat, originally, is digging out some of the original source material on what is Bilderberg, who are they? Enthusiastic members of the SS and in the early days of the Nazis, in the early days of the SS. And then he married into the Dutch royal family. But it was seeing that this ex-SS officer had been the chairman of these conferences for the first 20 years until 1975 that really made me look at this as something a little bit deeper than just some sort of political lobbying group that liked to keep, things under the carpet a little bit. And this Nazi aspect to it, I then started to look. I was helped by various other researchers. Very sad to talk about last week on UK Column, the passing of Dave Barmby, because I worked very closely with him about 7, 8, 9 years ago in tracking down some of the origins of why it was called the Bilderberg Conference. In fact, I was commissioned to write a book about it by Pluto Press in 98. And I went to London to say, look, I don't know enough about it to write a book. So, I've since done that with Dave's help. And we've absolutely connected the Bilderberg Hotel, where they had the original meeting, to this battle in the Second World War, Operation Market Garden, made famous by the film A Bridge Too Far. And it's basically an in-joke, because Lord Carrington, who was in that battle sitting in a tank, plus various other characters, including Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, threw that battle. And they made sure that the Allies lost it, and many British paratroopers at Arnhem were sacrificed. And this was a deliberate act in order to give the Nazis an extra few months to squirrel away their wealth around the world, because they intended to create a Fourth Reich, a financial Fourth Reich, Patrick. And that was why they chose this hotel in Oosterbeek in Holland, the Bilderberg Hotel, because this hotel represented, it's right next to the place where the British troops in that battle had been massacred because they'd been betrayed by their own side, the British Army. And so from that hotel, of course, all these other meetings came. This was an in-joke, really. And that area where the British troops were being massacred was described by the Germans as the Hexenkessel. And it's still talked about by the Dutch as the Hexenkessel, which is the witch's cauldron where the British were killed. So this slowly but surely, with Dave's help and others, I made this connection, a very strong connection between this battle in World War II, which extended the war and enabled this wealth to be secreted into Switzerland, into South America. And then it was laundered through the Sullivan and Cromwell's, the Dulles Brothers law firm in New York. And Martin Bormann, who many say died, but he didn't. He was over in South America. Paul Manning writes about this in his book, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, creating 750 companies to put this the loot from World War II into those businesses. And often this was the cheekiest trick of all. The chutzpah is unbelievable. They were putting Jews in charge of some of these firms, many of the firms, in order to disguise the fact that these companies, these Fourth Reich businesses, were actually funded through the loot of the Nazi occupation of Europe in the Second World War. And I think it's pretty clear to me that the NATO and Bilderberg went together. They were created around about the same time, NATO a little bit further. But then they realized in the NATO countries that they needed to do this classic thing, which is to keep the Russians out of Europe, to keep the Americans in Europe, and the Germans down. And so that's what NATO was about. And that's what Bilderberg was about, making sure that politicians with those sympathies were installed right across Europe. They were really worried. I mean, obviously, many people know that the Italians and the Greeks were virtually communist countries at the end of World War II. They, you know, they'd become very, very left wing. And so a lot of the CIA's efforts, initial efforts, were putting in, and obviously the coup in Greece to doing that. Anyway, so Bilderberg is in the background of all of this, making sure that those NATO aims are kept to. And then my book is called The Traitors of Arnhem, really explains the details of how I know that these specific individuals who then later became chairman of the Bilderberg conferences, often also secretary generals of NATO, were involved in throwing this battle in the Second World War. So for them, they were looking at it, you know, Bilderberg, we know why it's called Bilderberg, nobody else does. Well, thanks to Dave Barnby and my research, hopefully more people realise why it's got this title and how it's absolutely unbelievably connected with the whole NATO project, which is now causing death and misery, you know, really right around the world. A lot of people are looking at this thinking, you know, I was chatting with some police here actually in Lisbon earlier in the week, saying, are you going to be volunteering to fight the Russians? And they're laughing, no, not me. And, you know, this is, of course, an absolutely diabolical war, an evil war. And I think at the end of it, Michael Hudson puts this quite well. It's really a war against, in Ukraine, is really against, we're two different systems. We were just hearing about the finance capitalism. You know, yes, Alex, you're absolutely right. It needs to keep going. And if it doesn't keep going, it starts to stall. It's, you know, there are serious problems. The other system, which the Russians and, you know, the others, the Chinese, you know, they are saying, well, we're going to have an elected government, obviously not in China, but certainly in Russia, that that controls the infrastructure of the country, that governs the laws. In finance capitalism in the West, in Europe now, the United States of Europe, Britain and the United States in the NATO countries, what they've got is actually a dictatorship, a financial dictatorship, where the media is bought up by finance capitalists if they're in the way. The politicians are bought up. And David Lammy at this Bilderberg conference is a perfect example of a lapdog of the financial elite. He will do almost anything they say. And when he becomes foreign secretary in the next, by the way, my inside sources have told me, and these are people that work in government, that the Conservatives don't want to win the next election because they know there's going to be a financial collapse in, they reckon, around about 2 years' time, and they want the Labour Party to be in charge so that they can take all the blame for it in a couple of years. So the Tories are doing everything they can to make sure in Britain that they don't get in. And Lammy will be the foreign secretary at that point, almost certainly. And there he is, really doing everything he can to bend over backwards to be the person they want him to be. He's not his own man. He is one of the creatures of Bilderberg. And I'm afraid most of Europe's politicians are creatures of Bilderberg these days.
Oh, that's great insights there, Tony. You also brought up a really important point regarding NATO. I like to describe it, and NATO is the glove which America can slide its hand into to steer European political, economic, and military geopolitical affairs. But also the other point you brought up, which is really important, was after the Second World War, all those 700 companies formed a kind of transnational corporate network, that much of it that still dominates today. All these major industries, ThyssenKrupp Steel, Siemens, and the list goes on. They've morphed into different other organizations and entities. And yeah, that is the transatlantic network, and really that undergirds organizations like Bilderberg even to this day. So it's a really important point you brought up there, Tony. Tony, can you speak to some of the functions of Bilderberg, the protocols, the traditions whereby there have been past presidents and prime ministers that have been invited, and they're there in a kind of subservient internship sort of function, they're being auditioned? Maybe tell us a few names and stories that you're familiar with there, because a lot of people are not going to understand that's one of the functions of Bilderberg.
Well, yeah, it absolutely is. Macron is one example. Trudeau, another example. That what we've got in the NATO countries really is this system for, I think, probably the best documented and most obvious are Bill Clinton and Tony Blair, who both went to the Bilderberg meeting. I mean, it's just, they're not interested in people who are in power so much as people who are, they are maneuvering into power through the next election. And so Blair was there just before he became the Labour leader, I believe, or maybe just after he became the Labour leader. He was also going along to these Bilderberg conferences, but he wasn't on the lists. And, you know, we found someone else this year who wasn't on the list, very important person involved in bringing Sweden into NATO, the chief negotiator doing that. They're at the conference, photographed, etc., but they weren't on the official list. So, you know, we have to take these lists as almost with a pinch of salt. Bill Clinton again. People don't realise the guy was a Freemason. I've seen photos of Bill in his nice, Masonic aprons and things. Nothing really much there out on the internet saying he was, but he definitely was. He was there at the conference just before he got the Democratic nomination. So this is the way they do things. They're really not interested in having anybody in these important key powerful positions, particularly because these prime ministerial roles, these presidential roles, are all about appointing senior security service staff, that those kinds of people, the people that run MI6, MI5, all these, the permanent government, they're all appointees. In fact, in many countries, of course, it's also the judiciary, are appointed by these senior figures. And Bilderberg don't want the idea of anybody who, like, I mean, imagine Jeremy Corbyn, you know, somebody like him making it into that position to be able to hire and fire security chiefs. Well, we're also, of course, in the situation. Oh, by the way, RFK, you know, Robert Kennedy, who's been doing all this great work around the COVID, he sent a video message to the protest here in Lisbon on Saturday, and they had a video wall and they played his little "Well done, everyone, for protesting against Bilderberg." Of course, he is a political candidate who is absolutely in opposition to this way of running things, and quite right so. He's, I think, extremely courageous to stand, considering what's happened to, you know, his uncle and his father.
And also, Tony, in terms of, you know, who carries the most weight on the steering committees, is this a constant, or does it change depending on how the economy and how technology is changing, or how the geopolitical landscape's changing? What are your views on the steering committee and the heads of the steering committee?
Well, the steering committee is really obviously what we were just hearing about, the kind of roundtable group for Bilderberg. I always remember the Economist magazine back in the 1980s published over Christmas, when they had a reserve editor in who didn't know what he wasn't allowed to say. They had a piece about Bilderberg, which I put on my own website, bilderberg.org, saying ne plus ultra, nothing above this. And they were, even in those days, they knew that this was the place where everybody wanted to go to, if they could possibly go, if they wanted to get ahead in politics. But look, as to what exactly is the steering committee up to, I think we have to understand, in the background to all of this, we've got a whole load of very key players in all of the major crises of today. Now, you're kind of missing it if you're just focusing, say, on Ukraine, as I've been doing, right? Or just on the economy, or, for example, just on COVID. And by the way, the COVID featured massively. WikiSpooks did a fantastic compilation of all of the Bilderbergers involved. I think it final total was around about 130 Bilderbergers in key positions around the world, implementing both the COVID restrictions, the lockdowns and this sort of thing, as well as profiteering from and implementing these jabs afterwards. So very, very important in those. So you could run through a list of crises. So Ukraine, the cost of living crisis, which, by the way, for many families means that it's taking they're unable to feed their kids, or they're having to work so long they cannot look after their own children. They have to sort of farm them out to nurseries and other people. So you've got the economic crisis, you've got the climate crisis, so-called, going on. We've got a migrant crisis with massive numbers of people being brought into the UK across the channel by organised crime, people trafficking going on. We've got the trans crisis in the schools where, you know, all these techniques being used to kind of prize young people who are vulnerable away from their parents and into inappropriate sexual behaviours and ideas. We've got, I mean, this is one that's hardly talked about, but the pesticide crisis. Look, this is, these pesticides are drip, drip, drip poisoning us it just as much as some of the pharmaceutical industry. We don't often talk about that. And of course, as I mentioned before, COVID. So you've got a whole pattern of crises. And this is what I find so fascinating about studying this, is you have a look at these, this whole idea of accelerationism, because the accelerationists, as we, I mean, I think it was the UK column put out, Ian Davis put out a brilliant piece about this. The idea is that the policy that they're farming out to the politicians through Bilderberg is deliberately designed to take these various crises and make them worse. So that the press also sitting in there, they know that these things are going to be made worse, but they're part of the secret. They're part of the inner circle and they won't talk about it. So accelerationism, I think, is very important to understand. And what, who is driving that? You know, what's behind that? And you can, and you, I don't know how many of your listeners know about this thing, the Dark Enlightenment, which is this manifesto, which was put together bizarrely by an old school friend of mine from Southeast London, Nick Land, who's now in Shanghai. The Dark Enlightenment is all about this ultimate creation of many crises, multiple crises, with the ultimate aim of bringing in the central bank digital currencies as all these crises come to a head, as well as this idea that actually technology is better than people. So that we will be slaves to AI, that we will become the creatures, the tools of, so you see what I'm saying, is the Bilderberg is not just about these specific individual policies. It's about an entire plethora of policies working together towards an evil end. And that end is slavery. That end is control. That end is changing humans' attitudes that we've had over centuries now. Basically a kind of Judeo-Christian attitude of making sure that we are always giving people the benefit of the doubt, that we are always looking at the better side of people. Now the idea is zero trust. Never mind zero carbon. Never mind zero COVID. It's zero trust. And we don't trust anybody. Everybody is out for themselves. Everybody is avaricious. And we have to be suspicious of anyone, everyone. And so I think that is the deeper. And actually, money is very important, but it's a tool to these ends. What they're doing is they're instituting a kind of, well, it's a plot to cancel God. It's a plot to cancel morality. And so that's why I think there's a lot more to this than just the kind of, you know, policy, individual policy analysis makes out. There's a very deep, dark agenda here. And, and I don't think many of the people that go along to Bilderberg, like Lamy, who are about to do whatever he's told to do and implement his foreign policy of the Bilderbergs when he comes to become foreign secretary, have a clue that what they're getting themselves into. And they may, some of them, I think there was one, I think, was it Alex Karp that actually, was it Alex? I'm not sure. I think it was that he had a kind of breakdown, basically. Hasibis, the guy behind DeepMind, he had a kind of like, I can't carry on with this. And there was a few stories in the press about him just like deciding, look, I'm going to walk away. No, he's back. He's back again. And so I think some of the participants have got no idea just the depth of the evil they're getting themselves into through Bilderberg.
In terms of the luminaries, Tony, Henry Kissinger, some of the big names, the mainstays there. Is there a changing of the guard? Who's the future Kissinger?
Yes. Really good point. Really good point. Because Kissinger's 100 now. I mean, personally, I think he'll come back, even if he was very, very sad, actually, to watch at the airport. This is on a private jet. Kissinger having to wait something like 15 minutes for them to figure out a way to get his wheelchair into the jet. I mean, this wasn't very well organized. But yes, I think it's pretty clear to all of us covering here that Eric Schmidt is the guy who's taking over from Henry Kissinger. They used to be very heavy on the banking with David Rockefeller, who is actually quite a nice chap to talk to, but he never wanted to answer the questions. We're now moving towards the high tech and high finance, and particularly social media companies, these kinds of people. So they're interested in controlling the narrative, the agenda. It's just like, you remember the golden age of television in the 60s and 70s, when almost anybody could make a film and get it on TV. We're now seeing the, you know, obviously that was all crushed in the 1990s and noughties. And now we're seeing the crushing of social media, the break, you know, the destroying the golden age of the internet may be over now. So these are the sorts of people that they want, I think, in there nowadays. So Schmidt represents that, very much represents that, you know, the former Google boss. And he seems to be, you know, he's on the steering committee, etc. He seems to be the guy that's kind of leading it. And Henry Kissinger seems to be handing the baton on to him, Patrick. That's the way I see it.
And I got one last question I'm going to ask Tony, then I'll hand it over to Khaleesi, who has a question for you, for Tony Gosling. And this is about the coverage of Bilderberg, Tony, because it's changed over the years. When I was first exposed to it, I was following Jim Tucker from American Free Press, your sort of quintessential sort of intrepid journalist, with his hat and his gravitas and the long cigarette holder and all that. And Jim had his sources inside Bilderberg, and he would get the agenda leaked, every year. And then Jim sadly passed away a number of years ago. So Jim Tucker, Daniel Estulin, yourself, obviously, Alex Jones kind of came into the scene, a little bit more and more of in a bombastic way, later on. So these are the people that we knew Bilderberg from, a lot of people like yourself and these other names. And then Bilderberg eventually published its guest list, which it never used to do. And then they started having slightly more clandestine meetings or slightly on different dates. So talk about the coverage of Bilderberg, how it's changed. Are they reacting to the public, exposing this more? Charlie Skelton is another good journalist as well. I know a lot of what I know about Bilderberg comes from Charlie Skelton's work. But can you comment on the trajectory of this in recent years, the coverage? And
Sure. Yeah, I mean, he was a truly lovely guy, Jim Tucker. It's lovely that you brought him up because he was using these very old school techniques, which many of us younger journalists need to learn still, maybe, which is to go into the conference hotel well before the conference to chat up, buy drinks for some of the people behind the bar, etc., and to get groom contacts. Now, the Bilderbergs wised up to this. One of the stories that came out of the 2002 conference, for example, in Versailles through this method, through Jim, was the chit chat at the bar about invading Iraq. Now, we were outside hearing this, thinking, good God, this is insane. And of course, in 2003, it happened. We couldn't quite believe it was going to happen, but it did. And so these, when you're talking about the list of participants, as I've said, for example, Blair was at the 98 meeting. He wasn't on the list. So we've known for a long time that all sorts of people turn up at these meetings, and they're brought in cars where you cannot see into the back of the car at all. The list they used to put it out as a press release marked, and I've never seen a press release in all my days in journalism. What's that, 30 years now, which is marked at the top, not for publication. And this was a clear message to the editors that this is happening, but we don't want you to publish this list. In fact, they have a little thing saying it's all, you know, completely innocent. There will be no press briefing, etc. So one of the other things, for example, about 4 or 5 years ago, we were taking photographs of their, because they'd come out from the conference to let people in, and they'd have little sheets with them, and you could see on the sheet, there's the actual guest list there. So photographing that, we'd type it up and put it up online. And they've stopped doing that now. So they're very careful about bringing any information out that we might photograph, to put online. I mean, one of the reasons they're doing their press releases now, I think, Pat, is that on my Bilderberg.org website, I every year, whatever it was, about 92 up until I stopped doing it round about, I think it was the mid-noughties, I was getting hold of a copy by whatever means from other journalists, sometimes from mainstream journalists, and just cutting and pasting and putting online a list of all the participants for every meeting. So the Bilderbergers didn't want everybody, including the press, coming to my website to pick up a list. So they created their own website, and they started putting their own lists up. So this for me was, you know, I felt this is a bit of a victory, really. I mean, this is what all I really was after starting to pursue them in the 1990s was press conference, was more publicity, at least some criticism. So, for example, that you've got, 25 politicians from Europe in there, sitting in there. And we know from the Kissinger file leaks by WikiLeaks, that Kissinger is setting up diplomatic meetings within the Bilderberg conference. We know this as a fact from his leaked cables. And so this is a political, and of course, the main point really to make is that it's not just the journalists that should be reporting that are in there. It's the politicians should not be there. In fact, many countries have very strict rules of behaviour that say you cannot go into such a private conflab as this and be having private meetings with specific lobby groups. You have to register everything, and yet they carry on doing it. Really, this again is cheek and chutzpah, because there are for example, this succession of Sweden to NATO, the persuasion of the European nations to get behind this NATO war, despite the fact that the Americans blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. I mean, how on earth it's a perfect example of this NATO aim of keeping the Germans down, isn't it? That you've got one of the chief special planning people for the German government sitting in there, and I guess they don't talk about Nord Stream at all because his government is so in the thrall of NATO and the US policy in Ukraine, they don't dare even speak about it, even though the rest of the world is pointing their finger at Germany and saying, what the hell are you doing? Why are you allowing the Americans to bomb your infrastructure and just can carry on a war with Russia, which is something like a continuation of this the Nazis' war against Russia, that Barbarossa, you know, Hitler's attack on the Russians, Napoleon's attack on the Russians. And as I was saying, Michael Hudson is saying that this is something which goes back much, much further. I would go even further and say, really, this is you were talking about the Jesuits. This is the Orthodox Church that's under attack. The Orthodox Church doesn't allow Freemasons. In fact, they will excommunicate any Freemasons they find in the Orthodox Church because of the oath crime, which they take seriously. The Catholics don't, the Protestants don't. And this is where Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount says, simply let your yes be yes and your no be no. Anything else comes from the devil. Never swear an oath. And the Orthodox Church actually take this quite seriously. The Catholics don't and the Protestants don't. So in a way, you can see the Ukraine war as just a continuation of this attack by Freemasonry on the Russian way of doing things, the Orthodox way of doing things. I mean, I realize that's a bit out there, but I think we need to start looking at the history of the Russophobia to actually understand why we've got this meat grinder in Ukraine now. And what appears to be insane is not insane. It's actually an evil plan, Patrick. So anyway, thanks ever so much for inviting me on. I'm going to have to dash off now. And if anyone wants to listen to our coverage, the radio show is thisweek.org.uk. And that's it for me.
And Tony, your website's still going strong, Bilderberg.org.
Bilderberg.org. Yeah. And in fact, you know, this is a mad story, but I was absolutely broke. I was squatting at the time, when I first discovered a lot of this stuff. And, I was friendly with a woman called Zoe, whose sister was one of Henry Kissinger's godchildren. And I said, oh, this is, she actually wrote me out a check on the spot for, I think it was 150 quid and said, look, go and buy that domain, get a website up there, Tony. And so that's what I did. And it was Henry Kissinger's goddaughter's sister that gave me the dosh to do it back in 1996.
That's a nice story. also Tony's got a fantastic radio show, Bristol Community Radio, if I'm not mistaken. Tony has been
But I was, sorry, Pat, no, I was booted off community radio during COVID because, of course, we were reporting the dangers of vaccines. We've been reporting the Andrew Wakefield stuff for years. And so the station manager just threw the show off the airwaves. But we've been carrying on. In fact, the audience has been growing steadily ever since. In fact, we've probably got more listeners now than we had in Bristol on the radio through the online program. And, of course, it allows a lot more interaction. So we're still going strong, still have all sorts of, I think, interesting guests. And we still do a little bit of looking at Bristol politics, because Bristol is a Templar city. It was a Templar port, and it's still considered. I mean, we've got these people who control the city, almost the city, called the Merchant Venturers, which were set up under a royal charter in the 1500s. These were the people that financed John Cabot's trip to discover Newfoundland and North America, and there they are still going strong in Bristol. It's like having our own Illuminati in the city, and we try and keep an eye on them too.
That's right, former stronghold of the British Empire, Bristol. A lot of people aren't aware of that, but Tony Gosling, really appreciate it. Everybody follow Tony on Twitter. Just click on his icon now and make sure you're following Tony. Just keep up with his work and what he's doing, but also on the subject of Bilderberg, any of these globalist institutions and history as well. You'll find that Tony's work is a great resource. So I encourage everybody to do that. Again, thanks, Tony, and thank you from everybody in the panel.
Okay, brother. Patrick, I just want to thank you very much for inviting me on, because it's kind of, it's dark stuff, but I think, you know, someone's got to go there. And me as a mainstream journalist to come across this, listen, it's been a goldmine of rather nasty information, but I think it really explains a lot about the way the world works. So thanks very much for inviting me on, and God bless.
Thank you, Tony Gosling. Our pleasure.